Right now, I'm joined on the phone by Stephanie C. She is the media coordinator for the Buffalo Field Campaign. She's been with the Buffalo Field Campaign for 4 seasons now, and she has worked on this issue for 10 years. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day to stop the slaughter and harassment of Yellowstone's wild buffalo. Volunteers from around the world defend buffalo on their traditional winter habitat and advocate for their protection. Their daily patrols stand with the buffalo on the ground, and they choose to be on and document every move made against them. Volunteers spend all day from sunrise until sunset watching and documenting actions taken against the buffalo. They run patrols from cars, skis, and snowshoes to protect buffalo outside Yellowstone Park. Tactics range from video documentation to nonviolent civil disobedience. And I'm very pleased to be joined right now by Stephanie C., media coordinator for the Buffalo Field Campaign, to talk about the current situation with the Montana state government and federal government attempting to slaughter up to 50 buffalo, including calves, in the area. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay. Thanks so much for having us on.
Of course.
So, yeah, the situation right now, there was a group of 52 buffalo that were hazed from their calving grounds at Horse Butte, out here on National Forest land, captured in a bison trap near the West Yellowstone Airport, and then carted over to the northern boundary of the park, to the Stevens Creek buffalo trap, where they exist right now. They're being held for a few days. Originally, we were really, really concerned. This is a pretty crummy situation as it is, but they had said they were going to kill 16 bulls. There were 16 bulls in that group. And so we got a bunch of alerts out, phone calls in, got people taking action. And later in the afternoon, they decided they were not going to slaughter these bulls. So all the buffalo are currently being held in the Stevens Creek trap, and in a few days, they're going to release them. It's a pretty unfortunate situation any way you look at it. I mean, we're very grateful they weren't slaughtered, of course, just like the 300 buffalo about a week ago weren't slaughtered. But wild buffalo needs to roam freely, and the state of Montana is putting a chokehold on their migration and punishing them for following their natural instincts.
So at one point they were saying they were going to slaughter up to 300 buffalo?
Yeah, about a week ago the Board of Livestock met on May 29th. There are about 300 buffalo, including a lot of moms and calves, about 100 calves, in Montana on public land. And the Board of Livestock decided that hazing wasn't working, and so they were going to capture and slaughter all of these buffalo, including the calves. So we launched a pretty intense alert campaign and got a lot of folks taking action, contacted a lot of media, and got them to stop the slaughter, and they agreed that they would not kill any buffalo.
And then they decided a little bit later, after telling the media and reassuring everyone they weren't going to slaughter the buffalo after all, that they were going to slaughter a number of bulls?
Right, exactly. So suddenly they capture these buffalo, and we find out they did intend to kill bulls after they had said they weren't going to kill any of the buffalo. But with another grassroots push, we helped change their minds on that too, so those bulls are going to live.
Mm-hmm. So why, I'm assuming this isn't the first time that Montana, the state of Montana, or that the federal government has slaughtered or attempted to slaughter buffalo. Maybe
no.
You can talk a little bit about why they're even going after these wild animals that are, my understanding is these buffalo live in Yellowstone National Park, and that they venture sometimes outside of the park boundaries, and that's when they get into trouble? That's
right.
When they get endangered?
Exactly. They should be listed as endangered. We're working on that. There's a petition on our website. But the situation is that, you know, bison are migratory animals. And in the late 1800s, after the big slaughter, there were about 23 buffalo that sought refuge in the Pelican Valley of what's now Yellowstone National Park. And the park was pretty much created to help protect this last wild herd. Eventually, the herd has grown, and they're a migratory species, and they're also a plains animal, grasslands animal, and the snows in the winter here get extremely deep. Yellowstone's on a very high plateau, so they migrate out every year. They follow the seasons and availability of forage, but when they migrate out, they enter Montana. There's a border, And when they cross that line, they are unwelcome in the state. The cattle industry has forced a zero tolerance policy against wild buffalo in Montana. And the reason it is that they give is because of a disease called brucellosis, which came to North America with the introduction of domestic cattle, and domestic cattle infected native wildlife with this disease. The wildlife appear to be doing fine with it. Buffalo have developed immunities and antibodies, and they're pretty strong animals, but and they've never transmitted it back to cattle, yet the state of Montana bases their war against buffalo on the fear of a transmission, which has never occurred, even where bison and cattle have coexisted.
If that has never occurred, if wild buffalo have never transmitted brucellosis to domestic cows, to cattle, then if there's no evidence of that, then how can the cattle industry and how can the government use that as an argument to slaughter wild buffalo and to do other measures? You mentioned hazing. Maybe in a minute you can explain what that is.
Sure.
How do they justify this if there's no evidence?
Yeah, it's preventative. You know, they're doing this disease management, and they're using these scare tactics to make it sound like this great threat, and it's really not. I mean, brucellosis isn't even really that harmful to people. There was a time when, before the advent of pasteurization, people could get it from eating unpasteurized dairy products. Nowadays, it's extremely rare. No one's ever gotten it from a wild animal or a wild buffalo. And so it's pretty crazy how it goes on. So all these things, science points against the management based on this disease. So, I mean, ultimately what we are dealing with here is the cattle industry's control on public lands. And they're using this disease to keep buffalo from restoring themselves on public lands because, you know, there's so many subsidized cattle grazing allotments on our public lands, and the ranching industry does not want to lose those. But there aren't any here in the West Yellowstone area. So, again, there's no reason for wild buffalo not to be allowed to use those lands.
And slaughter, capture and slaughter is only one method they use. My understanding is, you mentioned something called hazing. Maybe you can talk about what that is.
Yeah.
But another thing the government does is to move the buffalo from one place to another, sometimes on train cars. And maybe you could talk about how that affects the animals.
Yeah, and that's essentially what hazing is when buffalo are in Montana, they will come out on snowmobiles if there's snow on the ground. They'll come out on ATVs and horses, and they also use helicopters to push, shove, chase, force the wild buffalo off of their native habitat, out of Montana, back into Yellowstone National Park. They do this again and again and again. And the wild buffalo, they migrate. They know where they need to be. And the hazing operations can take a really heavy toll. In the winters, you know, they don't move around much. And when they're getting chased for miles, having to use up those winter stores, that's a pretty significant impact. And then in the spring, you know, you have all these pregnant buffalo, and then you have brand new little baby buffalo. And so it's really difficult on the herd at any time for them to be harassed and chased in the helicopter. It's a veritable war zone out there, and it's all on our public lands. And there's wolves, there's grizzly bears, wolverines, trumpeter swans. We have an amazing ecosystem out here on the fringes of Yellowstone and the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. And here we have these cowboys dominating the landscape and kicking off our native wildlife.
Now, how many times in the past has the federal government or the state government, Montana, captured and slaughtered buffalo? Do you have any idea what the numbers are on how many wild buffalo have been slaughtered?
Yeah, well, since the plan's inception, the Interagency Bison Management Plan, which allows for all this craziness, that's been in 7 years. It was signed in 2000. There's been nearly 2,000 wild buffalo killed, and a 1,000 of those were killed just last year, most of them by Yellowstone National Park, ironically.
So when you say they're slaughtered, they don't go out and just pick them off like a hunter. They're actually putting them onto trucks or taking them
yeah.
to the slaughterhouse. How
right.
is this? Explain the process.
It's horrible. But what happens is they'll conduct some hazing operations, you know, where they shove the buffalo using machines and horses. And as the buffalo continue to do what they do, they come back out, the hazing goes on, suddenly the agents are like, we have to capture them. They have three capture facilities up right now. Two of them are permanent near the buffalo's migration paths, right along their migration paths. So when they decide to capture, they, instead of hazing them into the park, they haze them into one of these traps, which looks like a glorified cattle corral. They're really big, they're green, and they're really ugly. And that's where they trap and separate the buffalo. They'll separate moms from babies, and they'll separate yearlings from adults and bulls from everybody else. And then if they're going to go to slaughter, they get loaded up onto livestock trailers, and then they get driven to slaughterhouses in Montana and sometimes as far away as Idaho. Last year, they trucked buffalo escorted by Homeland Security to slaughterhouses 500 miles away in Nampa, Idaho. But sometimes the agents will test the buffalo for brucellosis, so they have to go through these horrible invasive testing procedures where they put them in a chute. Sometimes their horns get broken off, and that's a really horrible sight. And then they'll use these nose rings to hold their heads in place and draw their blood and test them for exposure to brucellosis, which means that if they have the antibodies, if they are immune, that they would come up as a false positive, and those animals get sent to slaughter. So it's every scientific way you look at this, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, the common sense, ecological, the spiritual aspects of the buffalo, I mean, those alone should be enough. But even the science points to how ridiculous this whole management scheme is.
Now, these are wild animals that they're taking to slaughter. They're not domestic cows. Not that
right.
I approve of the way domestic cows are treated, but I wonder if the buffalo respond differently than a domesticated animal, and that's and they're being put through the same type of situations.
Absolutely. I mean, buffalo in the wild, they're very family oriented. They don't typically hurt each other, especially severely. When they get trapped, when they get captured, they freak out. I mean, of course, they're wild animals. They're a wild prey species, so they're definitely going to, you know, react to a capture in an extreme way, and they tend to gore each other and hurt each other when they're in the trailers and when they're in the capture facility. So we've definitely been concerned about these 52 buffalo that are currently being held at the Stevens Creek Buffalo Trap in Yellowstone. And we'll have folks out there when they're released to document any injuries and their condition. And, you know, I mean, these are wild animals. This is our last wild herd of buffalo left in the United States. And they number, you know, less than 4,000. And they used to be 50 million strong. And one industry is dictating how our public lands are used. And they're dictating the life and death of the last wild herd. It's the nation's, you know, they're an icon in this country.
And you're saying that there's about 4,000 of them left.
Right.
Wild buffalo.
Wild buffalo.
Unfenced,
genetically strong. I mean, we do have other public herds on refuges and such, but those are fenced in. They're not allowed to migrate. They don't even really choose to migrate. The buffalo here, pretty behaviorally unique in that they do migrate still. And so they're really special. And they haven't transmitted this disease that the cattle gave to them in the first place. So why are they being punished?
So, in the federal government and the state government in Montana, you say they've killed about 2,000 buffalo in the last how many years?
In the past 7 years.
Interagency
Bison Management Plan.
And when you take into consideration there's only about 4,000 wild buffalo left, 2,000 sounds like a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
So
it is a lot.
When they after they've slaughtered these animals, and did you say about 1,000 last year alone?
Yes.
What do they do with their bodies? What do they do with their corpses?
Well, we've been trying to track exactly where the buffalo end up, but we've not been able to do that yet. Any help on that would be appreciated. But they say that they donate the heads, hides, and meat to food banks and to tribal charities. And as we understand it, no tribes will take the meat, but tribal individuals will through the charity organizations.
And so sometimes the meat, they say sometimes the meat ends up in charity organizations that assist native people.
Correct.
So what are the tribes in the area saying? What are the native peoples in the area? What is their reaction to this assault on the wild buffalo there in that area?
Well, there's been a plethora of tribes that have asked the government, instead of sending these buffalo to slaughter, bring them instead, let them come to our lands. We're trying to, get buffalo back on the lands and buffalo back with the people. And the government's response to that is no, because they say it's a disease issue, and the only way that the Indian people are allowed to have these wild Yellowstone buffalo is either after they've been slaughtered or after they've been through a government quarantine plan. That there's one currently in effect that's been going on for 2 years now, where yearling buffalo that are captured are sent to. It's like a little. It's a prison of sorts. These animals are being raised like livestock and being handled, and they're stripped of their family units. And the government's trying to create a disease-free herd. So that's a really sad thing. But they eventually think that they want to help restore buffalo on our public lands and tribal lands in that way. So those are two ways that Native people are allowed to, bring these buffalo to their lands. It's pretty insulting. And
And does the Buffalo Field Campaign ever work with tribes in Montana or with Native peoples there?
we do. I mean, we have a lot of individual supporters. Rosalie Little Thunder is a co-founder of Buffalo Field Campaign. She's a Lakota elder and an incredible activist. And she and Mike Meese, 10 years ago, and after the slaughter of '96, '97, they decided there needed to be a presence so that people could see what was happening to these buffalo. And so the Buffalo Field Campaign was started, and it was then called Buffalo Nation.
So the government, one of the reasons the government has given, the federal and state government has given for not allowing some of the native peoples to take these buffalo onto their lands rather than sending them to slaughter is that it's a health risk.
It's
So,
a disease issue,
a
yeah.
disease issue, okay. So, are they claiming that there's proof of brucellosis jumping from buffalo to cattle, or are they admitting that there's nothing to substantiate that?
They did a study years ago, decades ago, at Texas A&M University in a controlled setting, in a laboratory setting, where they force-fed infected placenta. Brucellosis is a reproductive disease. And they force-fed infected placenta from a buffalo to a domestic cow, and they say, yes, it can happen. And so they base their, theory on the transmission on a laboratory setting test.
And what studies do you base your argument on that they do not transmit brucellosis?
Well, there's a herd, there's buffalo in Grand Teton National Park, and there's cattle grazing that's been grandfathered into that park. And buffalo and cattle coexist there. There's never been a case of transmission there. And these buffalo have never done it. There's no case on record of it ever happening. And, the states surrounding Yellowstone monitor it pretty closely.
So, do you think that the reasons that the state and federal government and that the cattle industry is giving for this, the slaughter of the wild buffalo and the hazing and the transport of them off of public lands, what do you think their reasons are? Do you think they really are fearing that this might create some epidemic of brucellosis within the cattle, or do you think there's some other reason going on there behind that argument?
I think there's probably a little bit of reason to their fear, but there are solutions, cattle-based solutions that could be put into place that would placate all those fears, alleviate those fears. So keeping the buffalo off of the public lands, slaughtering them and hazing them, forbidding them to, do their ecological role, fulfill their niche on this continent. It has nothing to do with disease. It has everything to do with keeping buffalo off the grass. I mean, it wasn't 200 years ago that buffalo were wiped off nearly this continent, and cattle quickly replaced them. And that was, part of the reason was for cattle to take over the land. And so the fact of buffalo trying to restore themselves, or the idea, that is a fear in the cattle industry's eyes as well. And the bigger one, I would definitely say.
Why do they fear that so much?
Because they have strong subsidies on our public lands as far as grazing allotments. There are millions and millions and millions of acres that the livestock industry leases from the people of the United States and puts cattle on it and destroys riparian areas, gets, you know, government agencies to come out and trap and poison wildlife, forces buffalo off of public lands. I mean, the list is, goes on to the cattle industry's misuse of our public lands, but it's cheap for them, and they want to hang on to that.
How does the cattle industry manage to do what you're saying, to have this all the subsidies and misuse public land and kill wildlife and do all of this on a taxpayer's dollar and land? How do they pull that off?
Good question. We keep asking that over and over again. There's some big corporate ranchers that do use, like Budweiser, for example, has a lot of corporate or public lands, grazing allotments, and they've got super incredible political clout. And from what I understand, there's a lot of banks invested in the ranching community. There's a lot of money, and, you know, those guys can afford lobbyists, and they're talking to politicians, and they're, you know, it's how dirty it can be. And the cattle industry is really no different than you might think of the oil or the mining industry.
And do you think local politicians in Montana feel that the cattle industry is so huge that that's their main constituency or something? Are they just answering to what they think is their main constituency?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on.
Is that true, though? Is that their
main
constituency?
It's a good question. I mean, Governor Schweitzer, who is our current governor, certainly was not put into office by the cattle industry. That much is clear. But, you know, they're still a powerful force, and for some reason, people seem to fear them. The cattle industry has a history of being extremely violent in their taking lands and keeping lands for cattle and moving other livestock off the lands they thought was for cattle and killing wildlife and killing Indians, and the list goes on. And I think, you know, people have a fear instilled by the cattle industry, but they're really powerful. I don't think they make that much money. There's a handful that probably make quite a bit of money, but the majority of them, you know, I don't understand where the power and fear comes from.
Well, it might have something to do with who has the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the situation currently is that about a couple of weeks ago, they were going to slaughter 300 buffalo.
Right.
And then there was an outcry, and the Buffalo Field Campaign sent out a lot of information, and
right,
they decided it wasn't worth their while to do this, and so they told the media, and we're not going to do it after all. And then just a few days ago, they said they were going to slaughter some bulls, about 16, is that right?
Yes.
And then they called that off because of pressure. So at the moment, what exactly is the situation again? They have some buffalo, in captivity.
Yeah, they have 52 buffalo in the Stevens Creek Bison Trap, which is inside Yellowstone National Park, and they're going to hold them there for a few days and eventually release them back into Yellowstone.
So they're not going to transport them? Because I had heard there was a potential.
They did transport them. They were captured here along the western boundary.
I see.
And then they trucked them over 150 miles to the northern boundary of Yellowstone, where there's another trap, the Stevens Creek trap. And the irony is, if this is about brucellosis, there are no cattle in this area. And there are cattle just a few miles outside the northern entrance of Yellowstone. So why would they truck buffalo from where there are no cattle to an area where they're just a few miles away?
So they're going to release them back into Yellowstone, and they're not going
right
to slaughter any at the moment. So is this a time for people to take a deep breath and go, okay, everything's good and we can relax now?
I don't know. We'll see. Buffalo being buffalo, they're still moving, trying to move out of the park. The agents, including the Park Service, have been really busy inside Yellowstone, miles into Yellowstone during tourist season, hazing buffalo with horses and a helicopter. So tourists to Yellowstone are now witnessing this, and it's pretty intense. They've never done this like haze these animals so relentlessly, so deep inside our national park.
You say tourists are seeing it now. Do
yes.
they? Do you think that they make an attempt to hide this from tourists?
We do. When we're documenting things, when tourists aren't around, it's usually when most of this is going on. And when we're documenting things, the agents and law enforcement do as much as they can to keep us from being close enough to get good documentation of what's going on.
I'm speaking with Stephanie C. She is the media coordinator for the Buffalo Field Campaign, and she's worked with them for 4 seasons, but she's worked on this issue for much longer, for about 10 years. I want to ask you, Stephanie, what are some of the tactics employed by the Buffalo Field Campaign? Is it mostly just monitoring and tracking and trying to notify the public, or do you also ever take any kind of direct action? What kinds of things do you do?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things. We use everything in the toolbox, and from, you know, being witnesses and bearing witness and documenting and sharing that footage, sharing those images, sharing our stories, everything that we're learning from the buffalo, talking to politicians, going to meetings, talking to supporters, and definitely direct action is a huge part of BFC, and there's been quite a number of events over the years that have helped save a few buffalo, and, you know, civil disobedience is a pretty useful tool sometimes.
Can you talk about some of the direct actions you've taken, some of the civil disobedience?
Well, you know, there's been volunteers over the years that have put themselves between the buffalo and the trap, or the buffalo and, you know, locking down to trailers that were carting buffalo to slaughter, or, you know, setting up a monopod inside the, you know, a bison trap and preventing slaughter, or blocking roads from the agents to not be able to get to a trap to be able to haze buffalo into it. A number of different creative
mm-hmm,
things
mm-hmm. Can
have
you talk,
gone on over the years.
Can you talk about some of the successes that have happened? We heard, you know, that in the last 7 years or so that about 2,000 buffalo have been slaughtered, and that many more have been, you know, hazed or trucked around, and this is all on public lands. But what about some of the successes?
Well, you know, it seems sometimes that successes are really small to find. It's really hard to find them, but we have to realize with this issue that the prejudice that's against the buffalo is generations old, and so it's going to take a long time to see significant change. However, we have been really witnessing in the past 10 years, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary this weekend, in fact, and we've seen public opinion really start to change. We've seen people, more and more people, becoming aware of this issue and taking action for the buffalo. We have a new governor that he hasn't done anything yet. He's the first governor to come out and promise to provide more habitat, more tolerance for wild buffalo in Montana. The community here in West Yellowstone, the community in Gardner and throughout Montana, is really starting to get more and more vocal about what's going on. And here we had 2 captures, and the public took extreme action, and we stopped 2 slaughters from happening. And that is an immense victory. And even though, you know, the buffalo were still captured, the fact that they're still alive is pretty significant. That doesn't usually happen. In fact, that almost never happens. So although we definitely advocate for them to leave the bison alone and let them roam, we definitely appreciate that they didn't kill these buffalo.
Mm-hmm. So you said that one of the things that you do at the Buffalo Field Campaign is to bear witness and to report to the outs, you know, to people. You say it's often hidden from tourists. They do it not during tourist season, and they don't really want the public to see this kind of thing. And one of the things that you do is to bear witness and then let people know what you've seen, what you've experienced. It must be pretty hard work to do what you're doing. I mean, even not just the physical aspect of being in a location in Montana, in the Yellowstone area, where it can be extremely cold in the winter, and it, you know, but I mean, so not even aside even from the physical challenges of it, and I'm sure it's very physically challenging, the emotional aspects must be very draining. How do you deal with that?
It's really hard sometimes. I mean, it's hard. The thing of it is that Buffalo Field Campaign is an amazing place. The people that come through here, it's like the buffalo have chosen them, and they have had a calling, and they come here, and we all experience this together. So we have each other to talk to about it, to share our emotions with. We laugh a lot. We play a lot of music. We do a lot of hiking, and we spend really beautiful days with the buffalo sometimes. But it's extremely emotionally challenging, and the past few weeks have been really intense with this roller coaster of capture, we're going to slaughter, we're not going to slaughter, capture, slaughter, it's intense, and these buffalo are really magical beings, and to see them treated this way, it gets down into the very depths of you, and there's nothing I would rather be doing in my life than trying to help these magnificent animals. They deserve our respect and our honor.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry. We're just thankful to be able to be here with them and that they still exist. You know, these are prehistoric animals, buffalo. Pretty amazing.
And are most of the folks working for the Buffalo Field Campaign, or most of them volunteers?
Yeah, we are a volunteer-based organization. We generally have about an average of 20 to 30 folks here at any given time. And there's a handful, about 7 people, who dedicate their whole season, 6 months every season, to being, taking on different responsibilities and becoming coordinators with the campaign. But pretty much most of the people here are volunteers.
There's a couple paid staff.
Well, stipend.
I see.
And so, we provide room and board to everyone that's here to stand with the buffalo.
And do you encourage people to come out and participate in this? And if they were
we
interested,
we always need volunteers.
How would people do that?
You just give us a call. Our busiest time, when we really really need folks, is between March and the end of May, and we're going into June now. And it's good we have a lot of folks here still. But typically, March through May are the most intense times. That's when big migrations are happening. And little baby buffalo are being born. And people just need to get in touch with us. And you can do that by emailing buffalo@wildrockies.org or calling us at 406-646-0070 or check out the volunteer information on our website at buffalofieldcampaign.org.
Okay. So what can people expect if they were to come out there and join in on this? What kind of things would they be doing day by day? What kind of conditions would they face?
There's a whole lot of stuff going on. And typically, with our field patrols, we run daily field patrols from sunrise to sunset. We are out, and we are with the buffalo from a respectable distance. But depending on the season, we'll go out on skis, on snowshoes, or hike, or sometimes we're in vehicles. Because we follow agents around also. But we have morning and afternoon shifts, and morning patrols get up before the sunrise, and they're done around lunchtime, and PM patrols come out around lunch, and they come home when the sun goes down. Sometimes we also run night patrols if buffalo are in imminent danger. But we go out with video cameras and two-way FM radios, and we locate the buffalo and monitor the government agents and what they're doing, and we're out there ready to document anything that's going to happen to them. We communicate with each other in the field. Depending on where the buffalo are, we can have multiple patrols out and communicate with our radios, and we have one patrol that's always watching the headquarters of the DOL agents here in West Yellowstone. It's actually out of a basement of a private home, the home of the Kelzer family, where there's also a government-owned bison trap on this private land. And we monitor that house constantly so we know when the agents are coming and where they're going and when they're heading out to harass the buffalo.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty interesting. It's definitely one of the most intense experiences I've ever had being here at Buffalo Field Campaign.
Go ahead.
There's all kinds of stuff to do around the cabin, too. If people aren't comfortable being out in extreme conditions or out for really long days, there's radio shifts, and you can clean up or you can cook, or there's all kinds of, projects to make banners or puppets or any, splitting wood. There's a lot of things to do around here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what if people can't make it to Montana to participate directly? What types of things can they do to support the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign?
Tell everyone you know what's happening to the last wild buffalo. Learn as much as you can. BuffaloFieldCampaign.org. We definitely always welcome monetary donations or in-kind donations. We run on donations. People that care about what we do enable us to be out in the field with the buffalo. People can definitely take action by writing letters, making phone calls, sending emails to the decision makers involved with this. Two key people are Governor Brian Schweitzer, Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer, and Yellowstone Superintendent Suzanne Lewis. All that contact information is up on our website. And, I mean, there's just tons of things that people can do. You can get some DVDs from us and share footage. We have DVDs with various clips of what goes on out in the field. You can share that with your community or your friends and family. We have a petition that people could help circulate to get the wild buffalo listed as a distinct population segment under the Endangered Species Act. And be creative. There's lots of ways to help the buffalo, but spreading the word is definitely a key.
And do you think that's what prevented them from slaughtering these 300 buffalo this last time? Was public
People took
outcry?
out. Yes, it was an amazing thing. There were, people on our supporters list that get our updates from the field, and that's another thing you can do is sign up to get our email updates from the field. People got the message, they sent it to everyone they knew, and then they sent it to everyone they knew, and other groups, Humane Society helped out, Animals Voice helped out. There were some other folks that really pulled through for the buffalo, and it was an amazing effort. And the media was really hot on this issue, so there was a lot of attention.
What about
A lot.
boycotting beef?
Yeah, definitely do that. That's a good
If
one.
you're not already a vegetarian, that
Yeah,
is.
that's a good one.
And
Because,
what's the
that's what it all
connection
comes.
there?
What was that?
What's the connection?
That's what it all comes down to. I mean, it's the cattle industry that's calling all the shots and dominating this issue, dominating what happens to the wild buffalo. And it's beef. It's about, it's about steak for dinner. And regardless of whether or not you choose to eat meat, beef is really bad. Beef is causing wolves to die, and it's causing buffalo to die. It's causing riparian areas to die. It's causing extreme damage. And
Not to mention erosion and lots of other
exactly.
issues.
I mean, the list goes on. Diseases.
Water use.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the grain and corn and whatnot grown for
Yeah.
feed and huge amounts of water that go into that. So, I just have a couple more questions for you. I'm wondering, it's your mission as an organization is to stop the slaughter of Yellowstone's wild buffalo herd and to protect the last remaining wild free roaming buffalo and native wildlife and to work with the people of all nations to honor the sacredness of the wild buffalo is on your website. This is your mission. What do you see as your larger vision, though?
The larger vision, buffalo wild and free all the way back to Appalachia. That's the larger vision. That's generations probably, but that's the
And just
larger
on
vision.
public land, or you
We
just
could do
generally?
it. I mean, it's all about connectivity and coexistence, and you can do it with state government, public land. You can do it with federal government, public land. You can do it with willing private landowners. Some people own some huge chunks of land, and you could, tribal government. I mean, there's so many partners we could braid into this and create a connected landscape, and it would benefit not only the buffalo but a plethora of other species. And just allow them to naturally restore themselves. Be willing to do this. Be willing to coexist with wild buffalo.
And Stephanie, if you can just tell people one more time how they can contact the Buffalo Field Campaign, your website, your email, your phone number, how they can get a hold of you, and how they can read more about your work.
Okay, it's buffalofieldcampaign.org on the web, and email is buffalo@wildrockies.org. Phone is 406-646-6000. 0070, and we are at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758.
And you can probably find all that information as well as the information she mentioned earlier about the governor and others that you can contact at their website at buffalofieldcampaign.org.
Everything's up there. There's also video clips, photographs, lots of information. Mm-hmm. You can see a little bit for yourself what's going on out here.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Stephanie, for joining me today, and congratulations on a 10-year anniversary for the Buffalo
Field
Campaign.
Thanks so much. It's really been nice talking with you.
Yeah, thank you, and take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that was Stephanie C., the media coordinator for the Buffalo Field Campaign, and she's worked with them for about 4 years, but she's worked on this issue of protecting wild buffalo for 10. And their website, again, is buffalofieldcampaign.org. Thanks so much for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM.